The reading this morning is from Exodus chapter 1. These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah; Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin; Dan and Naphtali; Gad and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were fruitful and multiplied greatly and became exceedingly numerous, so that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, who did not know about Joseph, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become much too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous, and if war breaks out, will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their hard labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shiprah and Puah, "When you help the Hebrew women in childbirth and observe them on the delivery stool, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live." The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, "Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?" The midwives answered Pharaoh, "Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive." So God was kind to the midwives, and the people increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: "Every boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live." This is the word of the Lord.
Just in case, I think we've met quite a lot of you, but in case you don't know who I am, I'm Simeon, and my wife Gemma and our three children have been coming here for the last 9 months or so, something like that. We were working as missionaries in West Africa, in Mali, before then. So that's who we are briefly, and feel free to ask us lots more questions about that if you feel the need. Okay, so we're going to look today at Exodus 1. But just before we do that, I'll just say that, as I said, we worked in Mali, and we were working with a particular people group called the Saninki. Now, how many of you can speak any Saninki? Okay. Just my wife. There we go. So I think it's time that the rest of you learned a little bit. Okay, so here is a word that I'm going to show it. Well, I'll say it first before I put it on the screen. So, and then you can all repeat it. Okay, the word is hore. That was rubbish. Come on. Hore. Hore. Okay, so there we are. That's the first word. Hore. The next word is tage. 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 And the third word is kome. 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 Okay, so we have three Saninki words: hore, tage, kome. I bet you're all wondering, why on earth has he put those up there? Okay, so I'm going to explain now what they mean. The first one is nobleman. On my computer, that was up next to it, but never mind. Okay, so the first word, hore, means nobleman. Okay, the nobles in society. Okay, the second word is for a blacksmith. Tage means blacksmith. And that's literally what it means, but it can often be referred to all those people who do that sort of manual labour. Okay, and then the third word, komi, means slave. Okay, so we have slave. Okay, komi means slave. And so you can see here we have three different sectors of society. You have the noble people, you have the labourers, the working people, and then you have the slaves. Okay? And this is because in Soninke society, they actually have these as recognised castes. Now, when we hear the word caste, we often think of India being a society based on a caste system. But it's actually much more widespread than that. And Soninke society is one of several where they do have a caste system. As outsiders, it's quite difficult for us to observe that really clearly. But it is really important for Soninke people. Especially when it comes to deciding who you will marry. It wouldn't be appropriate to marry outside of your caste in their society. So that's something that we have heard that people have to consider. Now, it's not necessarily to do with how much money and how rich people are, because a noble person might actually be very, very poor and have no money, but they're still part of that caste and they're considered the upper class in society. But we did see occasionally with hearing about how some people are treated very badly in society because they are a kome, they are a slave. So we heard about one family we knew, and they had somebody outside their door who was begging or something, and they just said, "Oh no, that he's just a kome. He's not worth anything, really." And that's something that is still visible in the society. As I say, as outsiders, we don't see it all so clearly, but Soninke people who know their own culture, they will see it very, very clearly. So we'll come back to that in a bit with the different. I'll refer back to this again later. But let's have a look at the passage that we are looking at today. So we have Exodus chapter 1, and I'm going to divide this into three sections. So the first one is verses 1 to 7. Now, one thing that it's very important to do in the beginning of this book, and I'll just say that Simon gave us an overview of the whole book of Exodus last week, and it was full of spoilers. So if you don't want to know what happens next, don't pay attention to his sermon. It's also, before looking at the book of Exodus, it's also important to know about the history of what came before it, to know the context in which this story occurred. So we start off in the first couple of verses of Exodus chapter 1, talking about Jacob and his sons who all went to Egypt. Okay, we have them all listed there. And these names are all familiar to us because we've all read Genesis, and we all know things like Joseph and his amazing Technicolor dream coat. Okay, this is a story that's in the wider culture is very well known because there's a musical, there's all sorts of stories based on Joseph. So this story is quite well known, but it is an important one to remember when looking at the book of Exodus. Now, this morning, because I'm speaking here, my parents have decided to come and listen as well, which is very nice. I know several people here do know my parents, so you can chat with them later. But one thing that my dad always does when he's preaching a sermon is he has to put maps in there. So I thought, because he's here, I've got to put some maps in this PowerPoint. So here we have a map showing where the family of Jacob moved from Canaan, where they were living, to Egypt. So you can see, hopefully over here, you can see Hebron. That's the place where they were all living. and then Joseph was sold into slavery, and he was taken across the way of the sea over to Egypt. And then later, after he rose to power and authority, his brothers all came looking for food at the time of great famine. So they all came the same way as well. So that's basically the way that they would have travelled. And it's believed that the city where Joseph was living is the city of On, which is number 6 over there, later known as Heliopolis. Okay, so that's where they were. But on another map, just for you, Dad, there's also a map of Egypt itself. And here on this map, we can see the two cities which are mentioned in this passage. So we have the cities of Ramses and Pithom. Okay, so they're in the northeast of Egypt, not far from where the Suez Canal would be nowadays to move into Sinai. And these are the areas where the Israelites would have settled. It talks about in this passage about how they built these store cities for Pharaoh. So that's where most of the Israelites would have been living at this time. So we need to know. So we have some of the history there. I think it's also good to be aware that there's some things we do know, there's an awful lot that we don't really know. We're not quite sure from this passage and from other historical sources exactly how much time had passed between Jacob and his sons all moving to Egypt and then the start of the book of Exodus. We know that it's quite a long time later, many generations later, but we're not sure exactly how long that was. But in addition to knowing about Jacob and Joseph and all of the rest of the family, there are other things that are important to remember. So we've got Jacob and Joseph. We also need to remember Abraham. Now, Abraham came before Jacob. He was two generations before Jacob. And he made some, and God made some promises to Abraham. Okay, so these promises are repeated throughout the book of Genesis, particularly with the story of Abraham. But let's just have a quick look at a couple of verses which illustrate them. So the first one, Genesis 12, verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So that's God saying that he is going to give a great blessing to Abraham. Okay, so blessing. Ooh, look at that, the G's on its own line. Okay, the next one is in from slightly later, Genesis chapter 17, verse 6. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. So God is promising to Abraham that he's going to give him many offspring. Now, you have to remember that when he made these promises, Abraham was an old man who had no children. So this was even more unbelievable at the time. So he had the promise of blessing. He also had the promise of children. And then we had the last one is from Genesis chapter 17 again. The whole land of Canaan, where you now reside as a foreigner, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God. So there he's also promising land. Okay, so we have three different promises that God has made to Abraham. He's promised to bless Abraham and his family. He's promised to give them many descendants, many children. He's promised to give them the land that they will live in. So I think these three things, it's really good to remember that this is the background of everything that happens throughout the whole book of Exodus. So please do keep remembering those things. So the Israelites are now, as the beginning of the book of Exodus, they're in Egypt. So promise number 3 here has not come true yet. They are not living in this land that has been promised to them. But they have received many blessings, and they have had many, many children. Okay, from Abraham not being able to have children initially to suddenly having thousands of descendants. Now, there's a couple of times later in the book of Exodus where it talks about how many people were actually among the Israelites at this time, and it comes up to something like 600,000 fighting men. Okay, and if you extrapolate that out, that leads it to being possibly over 2 million people. Okay, we can't be sure exactly how accurate that is, but But this is a huge increase in the numbers. So it starts, as it says in verse number 5, it says 70 people at the beginning. And that has now grown to over 2 million people. So the promises have been made, and God has started to fulfill them. Okay, but the next part of the thing, we have verses 8 to 14, we have a new king comes along, okay? A new king comes along, it's a time of great change for the situation in Egypt. Now this new king doesn't know his history. It says explicitly he did not know about Joseph. So he doesn't know his history, and he just sees that these Israelite people are there in his country, and he's just looking at them thinking, I don't know about them. I can't trust them. Okay, it says here that they will become more numerous, and if war breaks out, will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. And he doesn't want that to happen. He is afraid that that will happen. So from his fear comes the next thing. It comes his next actions, which leads to oppression and slavery. So it says they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. I think it's worth saying as well that there isn't anything in the text here saying that the Israelites were planning to be a threat to Pharaoh. There's no indication of that. So it seems that these fears are all coming from Pharaoh's own insecurity. But he's putting all these people into slavery. Okay, so and we've also now got this divided society where you have the Egyptians and you have the Israelites, and they are not the same. They are being forced to be separate. Okay, but when it comes to slavery, there's other things that we can think about. Now, slavery is something that we don't tend to have to deal with all that often nowadays. But it's something that has a huge effect on our lives. It still affects us, and we've heard stories about the after effects of colonialism and slavery in the past. I think something that really struck me was that when I went to university, I went to Bristol, and Bristol is a city that was basically built on the slave trade. There were reminders all around there about how slavery was a big business that allowed the city to grow. In the news a couple of years ago, following all the Black Lives Matter protests and stuff, there was a big story about the pulling down of the statue of Colston, the slave trader, and throwing it into the harbour. So this is something that the city is having to deal with its own history. One thing that always struck me was when I was living in halls of residence and walking to university for classes, we would walk down White Ladies Road, but at the top of White Ladies Road there was Black Boy Hill as well. It was a real reminder that slavery is a big, big part of the history of the city. So it's something which we have as part of our own history we have to be aware of. But while we were living in West Africa, one thing that we were able to do occasionally was, in Mali it was incredibly hot, occasionally 50 degrees and more. So in the height of the hot season, sometimes we would escape. We would go to Senegal, neighbouring country, and we would be by the coast where it was a bit cooler. So that was something that we really appreciated. But one occasion when we were in Dakar, which is the capital of Senegal, we went to visit the Ile de Gorée, the Gorée Island, which is just off the coast of Dakar itself. And that is a place where you can visit the Maison des Esclaves, the House of Slaves. This is the place where a whole load of slaves were sent as their last point before they were sent off to Europe or to the Americas as slaves. So here's a picture of it here. So it doesn't look particularly appealing, and you can walk around it and see all these cells where people were being kept. And actually, if you look above each cell, or maybe on the floor in front of it, it's got little signs, and you can see who was being kept in there, and people are chosen to be in different cells according to their age and their strength. basically. So they're not being respected as human beings. They're just being classed by their physical characteristics. They're just being put into these horrible slaves. And there's a place at the end of one corridor called La Porte de Non-Retour, the door of no return. Once a slave went through there, there was no going back. They could never go back to their homeland. They would be off on a ship and sent off to the Americas or to wherever. And that's something that we were able to visit and to look around. And you can see that there's within the gardens of the place there is that statue, which is a memorial to all those who were sold as slaves. And it's something that it's a very clear reminder that this is all part of our collective history. So for many West Africans, many African Americans, this is part of their family history as well. And also for Europe as well, it wasn't just to America. Now, all of these things with so we've got slavery as part of what's of our own history, but we also, as I mentioned before, we can talk about how slavery is in certain societies today. As I said, the Saninki count the lowest of the low. They call that the slave class. Okay, and we still hear stories about how they might be treated. So it's something that still happens today. It's happened in our history, but in some ways it still happens today. And it's a way of not seeing other people as equal to us. It's quite easy for us to just say, oh, well, that's just in a different culture, that's not part of what we are like. But I think it is still clear that there are ways in which in our society we are still thinking of people as unequal or as other to who we are. There was a big fuss in the news a few weeks ago when there was a story from Buckingham Palace when the lady-in-waiting addressed this visitor and just kept saying, but where are you from? Where are you really from? Because this is a black British woman. And the assumption being that because you're black, therefore you can't be British, really. You must be from somewhere else. And so it's this mindset of otherness that we have to be aware of. So there are still inequalities, even in polite society, but also that we have to be aware of things like people trafficking. It's a huge problem. It doesn't it goes on secretly in many, many ways, but we hear stories about vanloads of people being brought into European countries or however it might they might actually get in. It's still a big problem. And then when we do hear about all this, we also hear about, we hear it all through the press, of course, and press reactions to immigration can be led by fear. They're stoking the fear of the people in order to sell papers or to get people to watch their television programs. So when we hear stories about immigration, we have to be very careful not to just think of all these people as the other, the people that we don't want to be associated with. There've been more recently, there've been things like the war in Ukraine has actually shown how people can be really welcoming. There's been a lot of news of Ukrainians who've been able to come over to this country and be welcomed in a time of great trouble for them. I think a few years ago, we also had problems. There were also massive problems in Syria, where the whole place descended into a civil war, and people had their comfortable lives taken away. And it's so obvious. So often we're thinking, "Oh, these people are the other. They are the immigrants trying to get into our country or something like that." But actually, these Ukrainians, these Syrians, they were living quite comfortable lives. They were suddenly had it all taken away because of the war. So we shouldn't be thinking less of these people because of their current situation. So it's a real challenge to us. We need to not see people as the other. We need to not live in fear of a challenge to our way of life, our comfort. We need to not be like Pharaoh in this passage. Later on in Exodus, we'll hear about how Pharaoh's heart becomes hardened, and we need to be really sure about how this is not going to happen to us. Our hearts cannot become hardened. Okay, so we have obvious. Okay, and then the final section of this passage, verses 15 to 22. First of all, it brings in these midwives. Okay, so the midwives are identified as two particular people, Shiphrah and Puah. Okay, so we don't know a huge amount about these women, apart from what it says here. Could they have been Hebrew women, Israelite women, who were delivering all the babies for the other Israelite women? Or could they have been Egyptian women who were helping them? We don't really know. I think it's quite likely, with the numbers of Israelites that there were at this time, that there may have been more than two actual midwives. I think they could have had... They may have been the chief midwives, okay? But yeah, there could have been more. But they're the ones who are mentioned specifically here. And we have this horrific decree to kill the baby boys. At this point, Pharaoh is trying to do it a bit more subtly. He's talking directly to the midwives, saying, if you do this, then other people won't necessarily hear about it so well. He's not trying to be public about it. But it's still a way that his fear is growing. Okay, the fear is still growing. I think we can often we should be able to see a clear parallel to what happens at this point here to what happens at the time of Jesus as well. That King Herod, after hearing of the birth of Jesus, he also issues a decree for all the baby boys to be killed. Both of these threats are coming from a place of insecurity. They have a great fear of a threat to their position, a threat to Pharaoh, a threat to Herod. And they're ordering the killing of the baby boys. But there is a big contrast as well in the location that they're in. So here in this passage, we have all the Israelite people are away from their home. They are in Egypt. And that's the place that has become dangerous for them, where they are under threat. Later on, thousands of years later, Jesus is born in the land of Canaan, in the promised land, and he's put under threat right there. So his family has to flee from the promised land, from the place of safety. But where does he go? His family all flees to Egypt. So the place of danger at this point in Exodus actually becomes a place of safety at the time of Jesus. Place of danger becomes a place of refuge. But we have here in this passage, we have these midwives who feared God. They lived in obedience to God, and therefore they didn't do what Pharaoh told them to do. So that's a way in which blessings are able to grow for the Israelite people. So God is continuing to bless the Israelites despite the oppression. In verse 20 it says, God was kind to the midwives and the people increased and became even more numerous. There were still the blessings, there were still the children that were being born at this time. This is a blessing on the whole community of the Israelites. They're growing in number despite this decree from Pharaoh. So at the very end of the passage, Pharaoh's order has to become more overt. It has to become publicly known that all the baby boys have to be thrown into the Nile. Okay, because he's getting more desperate. His fear has grown, but God's blessing has meant that he's not getting what he's wanting. So this time of persecution for the Israelites can actually be a time of great blessing for God's people. And so this is a sign to us that we ourselves can be blessed during difficult times. Now, here in the UK, we are not being persecuted. Okay, we have great freedom to be following Jesus in this country. We're all here on a Sunday morning, openly, publicly, worshipping Jesus together. So we're not under any persecution at the moment. We might, well, I think it's worth mentioning as well that we saw in the last... last year, with the accession to the throne of King Charles, quite how central to all of that the church was. The Church of England was the way in which Charles became the king. It was all by making promises to God through the Church of England. So the church has a key point. The Archbishop of Canterbury at the Queen's funeral was able to publicly talk about the Queen's faith as well. So we have great freedom here in this country. Now, at the same time, we might find ourselves at odds with the culture that we're in, which is to be expected. We are called to live in the world and not be of the world. So we're going to be different and we're going to have opposition at certain times. So when we have differences of opinion, when we have a completely different worldview to people around us, that's to be expected. But we shouldn't try to say that that is the same as those who are facing real persecution. There is real suffering for those who follow Jesus in other countries. In many strongly Islamic countries, if you choose to follow Jesus instead of following the teachings of Muhammad, then you can be put to death. That's not something that we ever have to deal with at all. You can also think of, on a state level, there have been things like, we may be aware now that the Chinese church has actually grown to be really quite significant. But that's come from a time of great persecution and repression, oppression from the Chinese government, where they were trying to stop the church from growing. Then they realized that it was growing anyway, so they allowed the church but restricted it, and it still continued to grow. And now there are over 100 million Chinese Christians as well. So that time of oppression was a time when the church still kept growing. There was still God's blessing on the church in China. And I was thinking back to people that we know in among the Saninki as well, and this one lady that we are aware of who's been following Jesus for 6-7 years or something like that. She is facing immense persecution directly from her own family. In Mali, there is freedom of religion. You can be whatever religion you choose to be. But that doesn't mean that if you change, you won't face problems from your family. And she is facing direct and often violent persecution from family members. We've heard stories about this and being attacked by masked men who are trying to hide their own identity, but it's because she is following Jesus. But she's continuing. It's not making her want to give up her own faith. She is being supported by teammates of ours. She is being, she is growing in her faith, and she is living under God's blessing as a result of that. So, these times of great oppression, these times of persecution, can be times where we can grow in the blessings that God receives us, God gives us. But that doesn't mean that we should go looking for persecution. God isn't telling us to go out and try to be persecuted. We don't need to go out and just say, I'm standing up for Jesus, in the place where we know that that's going to make us the target of attacks that are unnecessary. But we can understand that when persecution comes, when difficulties come, when arguments between different family members or friendship groups, when these times come, God can still bless us. God can still help us to grow in our faith if we keep turning back to God and focusing on Him. So, let's just bring these things to a conclusion, that it's really helpful to know the context, to know the history of where these stories come from, so we can understand them better. And in these times, we need to make sure that we are not like Pharaoh. We need to make sure that we are not judging people because they are not like us. We are not afraid of other people because of the threat they may be to our way of life. But when we do, when we're on the other side of it, when we're facing any opposition or oppression or persecution, we can remember that God will continue to bless us if we keep clinging to Him. Amen.